Hello and welcome to the EV Cafe Takeaway, a podcast focused on that zero emission future that we all hope for. And every week I am joined by one of the wonderful members of the EV Cafe team, and no, I'm not. So my safety net has gone, hence a bit of a bodger. But there we go. It's all right. I'm doing this on my own for the very, very first time, but I'm very happy to announce that we have innovators, pioneers and collaborators on this podcast, as you know. And today is no exception because we've got the wonderful and rather lovely Sarah Clark. Sarah Clark is from Europcar. Sarah, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me. And on your very first one solo as well.
You are. And so we've got a little commitment, a tryst between us to be nice to one another, haven't we?
Exactly that.
Fantastic. So tell me what you do for Europcar.
So I am the B2C marketing manager at Europcar. So I've been here for...
We're already breaking the rules here, because the rules are that we're not allowed acronyms. You should know this by now. And I am the official acronym police. So B2C, what does this mean for our possibly uneducated public?
It just means that we are a business and we are selling directly to consumers. So your average Joe Blogs.
Brilliant. Okay, so please pray continue.
Yes. So obviously, as the B2C marketing manager, my job is just to ensure that we have the correct products and services to provide to our customers, whatever that need may be, whether it's a short term, long term, holiday, you know, anything in between. I'm there to ensure that we've got the products that are fit for the bill.
Fantastic. Well, I can testify that you and your wider team across the world are doing a very good job, because I was able to enjoy the fruit of your labour in Madeira earlier this year. And I was able to drive a VW ID 5, I think it was, from Madeira Airport. Have you been out and tested some of your colleagues' offerings around the world?
Absolutely. And it's actually what kind of brought me to Europcar in the first place, because I was a customer myself. I've used Europcar pretty much from the offset when I started having to rent vans and cars and moving home and things like that. So, yeah, that's what really led me to Europcar. And obviously, as a customer, I had a pretty good experience. So when the job was kind of out there, I thought, well, this sounds like a little bit of me. Let's see what this is all about.
Fantastic. And Sarah, you've already won my heart by putting vans ahead of cars. You either know me very well, or that you actually had your experience with vans first. I mean, it is an important element, and I know Europcar are committed to it. So we'll come on to your exploits in vans a little bit later. But do you know what? You've been at this marketing game for a little while now, haven't you?
Just a little bit. I'm showing my age probably, but yeah, straight out of university. So around 15 years I've been working within marketing in various different roles, kind of bouncing around all of the different sectors, because I think that's it with marketing. It's a very, very broad umbrella and there's a lot of things that go into it. So yeah, really honing my skills across everything with all of the different roles that I've had.
Fantastic. And we're going to come back to obviously your experience in Europcar in a minute or two, but let's just say for everybody listening, Sarah gets an A star as a student because she's provided some real insights for us into her life. And one thing that stood out to me that is you've been also a restaurateur, you know, a business owner and restaurateur. So talk to me about that little prelude, because I'm interested as to why as well. Why did you go into that? Are you a particularly brilliant cook?
Well, I am an avid baker myself. So I make all of the team's birthday cakes. My very first job was in hospitality. I was a waitress. So at the fair age of 13, I worked in hospitality all the way up through university to kind of fund that lifestyle that I had. But then I met my husband while I was at university, my now husband, and he's worked in hospitality pretty much all of his life. So we'd worked together previously, and this opportunity kind of came and fell on our laps. And it was, you know, weighing up, this is what my husband really wants to do. I kind of already have my marketing thing going on. And I was actually 8 months pregnant with my first child when we bit the bullet and we said, you know what, let's not buy the house, let's buy the business.
Wow.
So we bought a restaurant in the Cotswolds. It was an Italian restaurant. My husband's Italian, so we were in good hands with that. And yeah, we ran that for nearly 4 years.
Gosh. Fantastic. And so whereabouts in the Cotswolds, just so we know?
So Lechlade-on-Thames, so kind of on the outskirts, nearer the Swindon side. Yeah, very lovely, all of the same. We were living in that area anyway, and my husband kind of grew up there. And
Well, it's not far from where I grew up as well. I grew up in Box, which is just outside Bath, which is my rugby team. We'll touch on that later. But it's a beautiful part of the world. And so you sold up that business and decided to get back into marketing.
Yeah. I mean, throughout owning the restaurant, obviously my husband was more the chef side of things and the service, whereas I was very much running the background and logistics and making sure that the business was running. And obviously marketing was a big part of that, and the branding and how we actually presented ourselves as a company. And then, yeah, as I said, I was 8 months pregnant. So we had a little baby throughout that.
Oh, wow.
And I think anybody that's ever worked with their other half, they know how difficult and the amount of pressure that it actually puts on your relationship. And throwing in a little baby into the mix with that, it was a lot. So we did it justice. It was really successful for a long time. And then, you know, we kind of thought we need a little bit of a break. We need a family break because you don't have that switch off when you work with your other half. It's you take the work home with you as well.
Yeah.
So we thought, no, we need a break. The opportunity came. So we sold up and we picked up sticks and we went to Switzerland, as you do.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Well, let's touch on that, but let me just empathize a little in that Caroline and I work together. And of course, it's absolutely dreamy. We never have fights. It's always smooth and plain sailing. I'll tell you the truth afterwards, because of course she listens to this. It is challenging, and we've got big babies. And by big babies, I mean sort of, well, what are they, 20 and 22 now? So, but they still, you know, get under your feet. So listen, I remember the calls when, you know, back in the day when I had small children, and yeah, it was difficult. So you have my utmost sympathy. But so Switzerland, what took you to Switzerland then? From the Cotswolds to Switzerland? I mean, I can see the attraction, but, you know.
Very, very similar landscapes, obviously. My husband's family actually live in Switzerland. And having not really spent much time with them at all, only kind of on a visiting basis, we had this freedom. We got a little bit pot of money and we were like, well, what do we do now? What's the next steps? And we thought, well, let's go to Switzerland. Let's spend like 3 months and we can, you know, spend some time with them. We've got our daughter as well. They can spend some time with her while she's growing up. Mm. And yeah, it ended up being nearly 2 years that we were over there.
My goodness. My goodness. But that's, I mean, it sounds like, I probably wish that I'd taken opportunities like that through life. You know, it's so important, doesn't it? It gives us such a good grounding, but obviously gave you a bit of a grounding in travel and being in different countries. And of course, Europcar to sort of, you know, use that as a bit of a segue back into what Europcar do and who they are and all of that good stuff. It probably gave you a really good foundation for you to bring into Europcar. How has it been sort of, because I think you were 3 or 4 years now that you have been working within Europcar. How has that journey been? Are they a good company to work for? Can tell us. It's just between us.
Very good company to work for. I think as I kind of embedded into the company, you come across, you know, people from all of the different departments. And one of the amazing things that I've never seen in any other company is the retention levels that they have, particularly at head office. I mean, you speak to some of my colleagues and they've been there 15, 20, 20, 35 years, I think, is the longest time that I've actually spoken to somebody. So, yeah, brilliant company to work for. Obviously, you know, a worldwide company and really getting to the heart of how we help our customers is we help to change the way that they move. And we do that on a global basis. And I've experienced that myself previous to Europcar. They helped me move from the Cotswolds to Switzerland through the hire of a van. So, yeah, we're very much in the business of helping people get from A to B.
Fantastic. And you're right about the retention thing, because I'd met up with Evelyn Torres and Tim Morris, who you'll know both of those guys. And I think they've got something like 60 years plus between them. They were both up either just shy of the 30-year club or just over the 30-year club. I mean, they were a bit. And then when I landed in Madeira and I'm chatting away with the lady that's looked after me at the rental desk, I said, oh, and how long have you worked for Europcar? 29 years. It was her 30th year this year. And I'm like, for goodness sake, does anybody else, you know, everybody joined when they were children?
Essentially, that's it. But it just shows you know, it's the people that make the job at a lot of the time as well. So, yeah, having that consistency of people and actually going through the company growth as well, and everything that's experienced, obviously it benefits all the kind of background office processes. Everybody knows everything there is to know, so it makes your lives a little bit easier. But it was a lot, you know, coming into a new company, a new job, a new role. I'd worked in the hire sector, but very, very loosely within powered access hire, the sexy world of scissor lifts and cherry pickers. And going into and going into the more the automotive side of things, it was a learning curve for me as well. So having that level of experience within the company was invaluable.
And I guess industry, particularly the automotive sector, is facing probably one of the biggest challenges it's ever had, right? You know, we're having to decarbonize, and for, you know, for all of us, it means, you know, thinking about how do we move to zero emission transport. That's one of the critical things. We've got this timeline of 2035. But for me, as an outsider looking into the rental sector, I've been around the rental sector since what I started in vans back in 2003, where I was working with some of the larger rental companies in the UK, and just kind of providing them vehicles, right? Commercial vehicles. And it was hard then just to help them get their head around some of the nuances in vans. But now we've got to think about electrification and where's the power coming from and how does it happen? And I know Europcar have really embraced this journey. Talk to me about how you as a company are taking that piece forward.
Wow. Well, in so many ways, it's something that we obviously have to really, you know, address with a matter of urgency, because we do have targets and we have a vast fleet. But it's not just the actual vehicles on the ground. It's everything behind the scenes to actually get those vehicles out. And yeah, so we've really put a lot of investment in not only the vehicles themselves. I mean, the end of last year, we were looking about 12% of our fleet, and we've got over 40,000 vehicles just in the UK, those kind of numbers. So a lot of investment in the fleet, but also the training and the staff, and being sure that we can actually service these vehicles and sell them to customers and help them along their electrification journey as well, because that is a whole different minefield in the educational side of things, is changing people's opinions around things, all to do with EVs. You know, there's a lot of fear and uncertainty and doubt out there, and how can we actually address those and, you know, get bums on seats, essentially. That's what we're in the business of.
And listen, you have absolute affinity here for us at the EV Cafe, of course, because the bums on seats thing is something that, you know, has, well, it actually stays with me from my earliest training. And I dread to think it's probably before you were born, but in 1991, believe it or not, let's not address the fact whether that is or isn't.
I was going to say, I was three.
Oh, thank goodness. At least you're alive. That's a big comfort. So I was on Vauxhall training and they said, right, you know, this is the most important thing that you can ever learn. Bums on seats sell cars. And actually it's always been the reason that rental has been a friend of the manufacturers, right? Because the manufacturer puts a certain number of vehicles into the rental companies. The rental companies then sell their services to multiple different users across a, you know, relatively short period of time, giving people a tremendous experience. And so for me, with the VW ID5, which I drove in Madeira, I'd never considered it as a vehicle before. It's too big for me, and it is too big as a vehicle, like, permanently. But actually, I really enjoyed it, and I found it really simple to use. And I would be an advocate of that product now, not necessarily for me, but for somebody looking for a family vehicle with a bit of something about it, all of that sort of stuff. And so this bums on seats thing really, really matters. Now, I know you guys joined the Green Fleet Rally, putting your own bums on seats for over 1,400 miles of that journey. What was the aim and the purpose of doing that experience, and what's been the output from it?
I think it was both kind of an internal and external decision, I would say, because obviously as employees of Europcar, we're kind of along for the ride and we need to experience these electric vehicles ourselves, not just the vehicles themselves, but the network, how they drive, how do you act, how, and kind of put our feet in our customers' views, you know, if they've never driven this particular type of EV or if they've never sat in an EV at all. You know, view it from their world and really understand kind of how does this all work? What is this transit? How different really is it to a petrol or diesel car? So there was that kind of internal educational piece, but there was also the demonstration of it's completely possible. You know, it's not in the future, it's right now, and it's completely doable right now. We have the infrastructure in place. So long as you kind of have that more personal in education and understanding of, well, this is how I need to charge it. This is how I find the networks. This is how I get about. And it's that adaptation. And I think a lot of people are resistant to change, I think, as a general rule of thumb. So if we can change ourselves as a workforce, then we can absolutely help to empower our customers to make that transition as well.
Some very evocative words that you've used there in that description. So really, you know, empower, demonstrate, experience, and obviously relating all of that back to the fear, uncertainty, and doubt. You know, that FUD, as we love to use the little acronym now. But, you know, an interesting comment from I think it was Ian Plummer at Auto Trader, who said, you know, we need to deal with the fear, uncertainty, and doubt with empathy. And it's not a fight where people are just regurgitating what they've heard down the pub or what, you know, the latest troll on somebody's electric post is saying. How has that experience, that demonstration internally, helped the internal fear, uncertainty, and doubt? Because rental sector is a very tough sector to electrify, in my opinion. But how has it worked with you guys internally?
I think it really helped us to understand that, you know, this is completely doable. And whilst we have very ingrained processes, we just have to adapt, just like we're adapting the actual vehicles. So how do we enable charging for the customers? How do we enable charging for the stations ourselves? We obviously have a vast network across the UK. We need to electrify them. We can't solely rely on the public infrastructure for that because of the quick turnaround of some of our vehicles. So yeah, we've gone through a whole electrification process. I think it's nearly 80% by the end of this year of our stations that are able to be electrified will be electrified. We've also expanded our network of EVs across all of those stations that we have. So there's more vehicles on the ground in different locations and a different variety of vehicles as well. We're doing pretty much everything that we can to expand that offering, but then it's how do we actually sell it is what we're addressing really as well. And, we've put a lot of investment in our people and the training of our people. Obviously, a lot of the learnings that we took from the EV Rally, for example, we've put it into a learning and development course for our station staff. Then, those customer facing staff members, so they're fully up to speed with everything EV, so they can address any of these concerns that their customers kind of come to them with. But we've also produced our external facing digital EV guide as well. So we've got, we launched initially with the EV showroom, which is detailing all of our vehicles and how they actually work. I mean, as a person myself, stepping into a Tesla for the first time, you're like, what do I do? Where's all the buttons? How do I turn, the climate on? It's a minefield. So how a customer would feel if they've just got off a plane, they've just landed, they're going to pick up the car and they're stepping into a vehicle that they've never even experienced before, they need to be able to get up and go. So we've addressed that from kind of the booking stage almost. So anybody that's browsing for vehicles, we've got the electric option there. And then we've got these, really in-depth, robust guides, which, tell them exactly how the vehicle will function, how to charge it, where to charge it. We've partnered with ZapMap, and their fantastic route planner is all on our digital tools. So we're providing them with all of the tools from the outset. But then when they get to the stations as well, we've obviously got our staff on hand. We've got fully trained EV experts, and they can do this really robust, vehicle handover. So actually taking the customer to the vehicle, sitting them in it, this is where all your controls are, walking them around the vehicle. This is the charging port. This is where your cable is in the boot. This is how you plug it in. This is how you find all of your chargers, and really kind of holding their hand through that experience, because, it is a minefield and we need to do whatever we can to encourage people to adopt. And that is, holding their hand through the experience.
And I must admit, I think that the vehicle handover experience is one of the most important elements of it. And it's interesting, a couple of things that spring to mind. So first of all, from this year going forward, for the van manufacturers, part of their grant application, so every year, or they have to renew their grant application so that the vehicle is approved for the grant. Well, they've got to have a robust handover process, which includes perhaps video and also documentation as to how the manufacturer themselves will hand the vehicle to their customer. But it seems that you're sort of ahead of the game in that you're doing that. I think it's one of the best initiatives. And it would have also stopped. There was a story, and another rental company, it wouldn't be appropriate to name them probably in the context of this. But actually, the funny thing was, I used to work for this company back many, many, many years ago. No, but I was in the lease. I was in the Hertz lease business. But we won't name the company that it was. Anyway, and in America, a journalist came along, took a vehicle, and wrote a story, and needless to say, it was a negative story. And it was a negative story because the vehicle ran out of charge because he didn't know how to do it. And so, one of well-meaning EV kind of positive colleagues said, "Oh, another negative story from the press," and blah blah blah. And I actually pushed back and went, "Actually, this is not negative. This is a reflection on what we need to do better, which is exactly what you've done." So well done, Europcar, for kind of meeting that need, that digital EV guide and all of those initiatives that you guys have done.
Yeah. And, you know, with that as well, we actually experience a higher customer satisfaction scoring for our EVs than we do our petrol and diesel vehicles.
Wow.
Because of the attentiveness of that handover, people are having a very, very positive experience. And if having a positive rental EV experience, that will hopefully help them and in their decision-making skills when they need to purchase a vehicle. Oh, let's make that one an EV. So yeah. It's all doing, it's the greater good. We're doing the Lord's work.
Well, absolutely. And, you know, it is one of those things that I think people don't realize enough, that every one of us are responsible. So I'm going to stop. I'm going to stop publicly kicking chargers when they don't work, because it's obviously visible.
Although that is another bugbear, yeah.
Is that? But we have these frustrations. But it's great to see that you're not only developing your own things, but you're collaborating with others, like Zapmap, in terms of that integration. So definitely pioneering, definitely collaborating. In what way would you say you're innovating? Because I've thrown that at you. That's merciless, because it's so difficult. But are you innovating the whole process as well? Feels like you are, but I don't know how to describe it. Maybe you can.
Yeah. I guess we are innovating because it's a whole new way of working. So, you know, the Europe car business is a big, big, big business when you consider it from a worldwide perspective. And as the UK, we're kind of just a little pot of that. So a lot of the innovation kind of stems from our group level into the systems that we have and the tools that we have to enable this kind of sustainable journey and ensure that, you know, not only are we helping people move sustainably, but we are a sustainable business at the very kind of source of it. So, yes, I would say there is quite a lot of innovation going on kind of behind the scenes. And, you know, we've got this, you know, 5-10 year plan of how we're going to get there. So it's very exciting times, very busy times within Europe Car. But yeah, certainly not dull.
Well, one of the areas I thought that, you know, is slightly, I think, is innovative, because you mentioned the behind the scenes piece there. What people often don't realize is that, well, first of all, that you have this commitment to get a vehicle to somebody within, I'm going to say 4 hours. Am I right? It's not long, is it?
It can be as short as 2 hours for our business customers. But yeah, generally, as a rule of thumb, about 4 hours, we can turn a vehicle around.
Which is, I mean, really impressive in terms of things. But what goes along to support that a lot of the time is vehicles that are just constantly, you know, that your team just jump in and out of. To get, you know, the things. So talk to me about, because I think you guys have just invested in some vehicles that will replace the little diesel and petrol runarounds with some electric ones.
Absolutely. So we have our delivery and collection service in the UK. It's one of our kind of key strategic initiatives, in that if the customer can't get to us, then we can bring the vehicle to them, obviously saving them time and stress and a lot of the headaches that can kind of pose, because they can't take their own vehicle to the station and then drive two back. So we have our delivery and collection runners, essentially. So we have two of our staff members. One will drive the customer's vehicle and another will come up so they can take the other driver back. And obviously, if you've got two petrol or diesel vehicles doing that, the emissions alone just from that is quite extensive. So we've invested significantly this year into the MG4 runners. So we've now got 24 brand new MGs, which are supporting all of those delivery and collection. So yeah, we're doing a big effort on that side of things. And actually, again, it's getting more bums and seats, because we're now our drivers are driving all of these electric vehicles, and that's like their day-to-day job.
I mean, it's great, isn't it? Let's be honest, electric vehicles are still a little bit more expensive than their diesel or petrol counterparts, although that's becoming less and less. But it's a testament to the fact that there are more, let's call them entry-level vehicles, that you can justify making that extra investment for the overall benefit for the climate. So it's kind of a good news story, isn't it?
Absolutely. And you know, we've had the MG4s on fleet for over a year now, so they're available to rent. So we know that they're great little cars. We know that they're proven quite popular with our customers as well, and the feedback on those has been really good. So yeah, it was kind of a no-brainer that we've got more MG4s that we can then service this additional product for. But yeah, you're completely right in that, you know, there's so many different EVs. It's not more, I think when they were initially kind of introduced to the mainstream, essentially, it was more premium vehicles.
Expensive, yeah.
Very, very expensive models. And that puts an immediate barrier up for kind of mass adoption. So now that the OEMs are really providing, you know, a full breadth of EVs, we're, you know, looking at our own fleet in tandem to that and say, well, we need EVs across, you know, all of these different categories so they're accessible and they're attainable to everybody. And it's, you're right, they are slightly more expensive. They're getting a little bit less, but it's on us as well to, again, get those bums on seats and maybe swallow a little bit of that cost to make them a bit more comparable to their automatic alternatives. So again, anything that we can do to kind of pull down these barriers across the entire kind of customer journey is what we're really investing in.
Absolutely. And it's so evident. Honestly, as I've got to know Europcar over the last probably 12 months in more detail, of course, I've known Europcar for a lot of years, but the privilege of walking with you guys along the journey since the Green Fleet Rally and kind of getting to know you guys, and that commitment across the business, it seems, both from the sales teams up through into the marketing team and all the product development team, there has been a real focus on making it easy. And one of the more difficult areas is, of course, vans, and you're wading in there too, which is absolute music to my ears.
Everybody loves a van, you know. I absolutely loved driving a van, and driving a van across the continent as well is a whole other experience. So yeah, we love a van over at Europcar, and it's another thing that we are investing in. So we obviously have vans in all shapes and sizes across our network, and we've recently invested in the eVito. So we've got those quite strategically placed across the ULEZ and CAS zones, or, you know, whether it's within the city itself or on the outskirts, so we can service that demand and help people do it more sustainably. If you're going to hire a van anyway, why not do it in an EV?
Yeah, absolutely. And because, you know, we know the journeys oftentimes, and actually the eVito, I've found as a very reliable range on that vehicle. So some people find it difficult, and the range in vans is less than that in cars. So people are a little bit more focused on that number on the dashboard, but the eVito has always given me great confidence. But I also know that you've got up to a bit of mischief with the Leicester Tigers. And so it's a good opportunity actually to talk about the Leicester Tigers and the relationship there. I've been fortunate enough to come along to the Leicester Tigers, although I'm a Bath man myself, just saying. seeing the Leicester Tigers play and seeing the Europcar branding, the relationship that you guys have with them. But tell me about the eVito and the rugby team.
So we thought we would put some of the players up to the task of packing an eVito to see who out of the team, who would you actually want to help you move house, and how efficient they can be. So obviously it's a good size van, the eVito, and it's got a decent amount of payload that you can put in there. So we did a bit of van Tetris with them. So taking your everyday kind of homeware, throw in a few Tetris pieces and see how well they can not only pack the van, but how efficient they can do it, and can they do it to the brief as well. So there was a little bit of cheating involved. There was a little bit of heavy handedness, I'll put it that way, from some of the rugby players.
Surprised me.
there was definitely some key tactics going on behind the scenes there. But yeah, they had a fantastic time. But it's, again, you know, I'm sure the Leicester Tigers, they're probably not avid van drivers, but we're getting them to experience the joy of an electric van. And they did. They loved it.
And I mean, look, I've got my little Leicester Tigers Europe Car rugby ball. It's got pride of place. Just for those of you listening only, I'm showing off. Oh gosh, right, I'm presenting the rugby ball. I was about to say something that would have been very unprofessional. Won't go there, dear me. Yes, moving along swiftly. But vans are such an important part of the makeup, and I'm very encouraged to see the guys investing in those. The clean air zones and the ultra low emission zones across the country are not going to stop coming. And I think, you know, if you know that you're going to go into Bath or Bristol or Birmingham or Bradford, a lot of them begin with B for some reason. I'm not really sure why. Portsmouth is another one that's got a clean air zone. And of course, the London, the ULEZ zone, which has, you know, gone all the way out to the M25 now, which, I mean, you can still drive a diesel in that zone, but it has to be Euro 6. But then if you go into if you're going to have a longer term vehicle, so maybe, you know, a longer term rental, It's an important thing. The Transport for London the scheme in the centre of London allows for zero emission vehicles to travel within the congestion zone for nothing, but you just have to register the vehicle. So you can commit to a vehicle for a period of time, can't you? You can sort of say, I'm going to have this vehicle for 3 months, 6 months, whatever.
Absolutely, yeah. So if it's a business customer and they're taking the vehicle on more of a long-term basis, then they can do that themselves. But at the end of the day, we own the vehicles, so it's our responsibility for the more short-term hires, so consumers don't really have to worry about that kind of thing.
Yeah. So, Sarah, what are you and what are Europe Car doing, you know, to get out there and to talk to the community, you know, talk to, you know, through events, through, you know, focus groups? How are you guys getting out there? Other than the EV Cafe, of course, because, you know.
Well, I was going to say, you know, we've just been to Everything Electric London with the EV Cafe. So, yes, lots of events. We're actually doing more events this year than I think we've ever done, and very electric vehicle focused events, the more sustainability. So we've obviously done the business side of events. We've not really touched much on the consumer side. So, and actually that's where, you know, the work really needs to be done. I think we've seen a good transition on the business side, and people really, you know, fleets are transitioning at a good speed. And we've seen, you know, the early adopters, they've been in EVs for a few years now. The people that we speak to at these events, you know, they're considering their second EV purchase, or, you know, if they've got a two-car household, their primary vehicle is an electric vehicle. Do they really still need that secondary vehicle? Do they need to purchase it, or could they be better off renting? So speaking to the customers, that's what marketing is all about, is understanding your customer. So you've got to pretty much speak to them, and then catering all of your products to their needs, what their requirements could be, whatever it may be. So lots of events, and then we also do a lot of kind of internal feedback and reflections and research. And yeah, it can span so many different things. I mean, from our fleet purchasing decisions, you know, do you prefer this EV or this EV? Which one would you prefer to rent? You know, it really helps to advise. And then through to our service as well, understanding what their experience was like with us. Is there anything we can do to improve on? So that's what we take all of that, and we listen to all of that, and we put it into the tools available to our customers, like the Digital EV Guide, as we expand the Knowledge Hub as well, which is newly launched. So helping people to, you know, a complete novice, and, you know, they may have heard some of these myths, and they're kind of turning off to EVs. Well, actually, you know, we have this really impartial tool which you can educate yourself, and we've done it in a way that it's really kind of bite-sized content, really digestible. and yeah, really address a lot of those kind of concerns that are around there.
Mm. And Sarah, it's interesting because I know you were recently at a Women in EV event, and of course we're really seeing that there is, it appears on the surface, and I welcome your feedback here, because it seems that women are not adopting EV as quickly. So there's the guys from Women Drive Electric, and people like that are really kind of looking to support women with a sort of slightly different messaging. Is that something you're experiencing? Is that something you're involved with?
I think it's quite interesting that you say that, and it's something that kind of Erin Baker, the Auto Trader journalist. So she was at the Top Women in EV event, and something that she was talking about that really kind of resonated is how we speak to women in the automotive sector, whether they're buying, they're renting, or we don't directly address their needs. And if you actually listen to, you know, how women speak around their vehicles, it's not really about the horsepower or, you know, the more technical aspects. And I am generalizing here, so I do apologize to any women out there who absolutely love it. But it's, you know, we're not so concerned with what's under the hood. It's how it drives. It's the practicality of it, the reliability of it, the colour of it. You know, does it feel nice inside? Is it nice and shiny? You know, getting down to those kind of more stereotypical aspects. And I think that the automotive industry as a whole has always been a kind of male-dominated sector, of course. So actually, when you think about women encouraging women into electric vehicles, it makes a lot more sense, because they value, you know, a lot of the characteristics that comes with an electric vehicle. They are all automatic. They're very, very easy to drive. They handle really, really well. You know, there's loads of different sizes and shapes. So if you've got kids, if you're doing the school run, if that's your kind of general commute, or if you're doing the longer distances, it's completely apparent to them. So, and because I think they're a lot more technology focused, whereas, you know, your ICE vehicles was more engineering and a lot more technical, they're a lot easier to understand and to kind of take over. And I think women really value that. And, you know, thinking of my own household, I hold the purchasing decisions in my household. Nothing gets bought, particularly big decisions, without my say so. And even down to the holiday planning, I do all of that, you know. So I book the flights, I book the car, I book everything. So we are the women in control of the household. We need to be doing more to speak to these women and to actually transition them and help them on their journey to EVs, because that's a much more kind of natural step in the order of things, I guess, is what I'm trying to say.
Yeah, no, but Sarah, you've put it really, really well. I think it's funny, because if I'd have felt bad saying that women buy on colour and buy on feel, and because being a man, you shouldn't sort of presume that. But having sold cars, I actually did sell cars. Shh, don't tell anybody. I actually sold cars before I found the light and moved to vans. I did sell cars, but there is an emotional attachment with women with their vehicle, rather than men are a little bit less emotionally attached, I think, you know, broadly. And I experienced that firsthand, and experienced people saying, you know, what's the make and model? Well, it's the blue one over there, you know, and but this is real. This is a lived experience. And so I think it's really important that we get the messaging right for everybody, because fear, uncertainty and doubt has engaged with people in different ways, and people need different messaging to enable them to embrace it. And I really applaud the fact that you guys are thinking beyond just the standard marketing messages, and you're thinking, how do we communicate to all of the demographics within our world? Absolutely. So, you know what, Sarah, I mean I've really enjoyed this chat today, and we normally don't let you pass like 35 minutes, so you're already It's And I think there's a lot more to Sarah. And I mean, we've only scratched the surface on who you are and how you got here. So I hope that we will be able to explore that maybe again in another episode. But sum up Europcar, your experience and this transition to electric for me. Just give me your Lyft speech summary.
Oh, there you go. Where do I start? As a summary, you know, electric vehicles are the here and now. They're not the future. And as our job is very much supporting our customers and helping them transition to electric vehicles. And not only just electric vehicles, but also being more sustainable and driving more sustainably. Hopefully that is in an EV, but it could be that, you know, as I said before, you don't necessarily need a second vehicle. Or if you live in like London, for example, you don't need to own a vehicle. You can access a vehicle as and when you need it. So, yeah, that's what we're really in the business of, is helping change the way people move, and really think kind of internally of, how do I want to move about? Do I want to do it more sustainably? And how do I do that? And we've got the products and services to enable them to do that.
Fantastic. I think it's so important that we remember, actually, that we've got a decision to make about our e-mobility or mobility, full stop, because most of the time a vehicle will sit on the drive, you know, 80, 90, 95% of the time, if it's a car in particular. So I think you make a really good point. I think the way that Europcar have evolved their business to really meet this changing mobility as a service kind of mentality, I think plays to your point exactly. We've all got a choice. We can be more or less sustainable. We can be sustainable even with using a diesel vehicle, but maybe only using it occasionally, and maybe using an electric vehicle and transport on demand, moving around on demand. And the joy that you guys are making it easy is perfect, because fear, uncertainty and doubt is very real across many people. You know, we've talked to many people that think the earth is still flat, the car is going to spontaneously combust. I was talking to a guy with an electric motorhome. There's only one. There's very, very few electric motorhomes on the market, and really, I think it's only the ID Buzz really that's available for sale, but there was a concept vehicle, and the feedback he got was, "You're buying a crematorium, and it's just going to burst into flames, and just that's it. It's just going to spontaneously burst into flames, and that'll be the end of you." But so that's very new.
Yeah, no, I think that's one of the biggest, I think one of the prompt kind of questions is, what would you change? And I think it's a little bit of it is the kind of ignorance that's around there, and they'll take something as gospel. I mean, we all know what these news kind of platforms are like, and you've got to take them with a little pinch of salt. But when people jump on it, and then they jump on the bandwagon, and I've always been a believer of, you can't really have a true opinion of something until you've experienced it yourself. So that's what we want to try and enable. Try it, give it a go. It's not scary. And yeah, once you step behind the kind of driving seat of an EV, I personally would never go back. And I think that's a lot of feeling of anybody that's really tried an EV. But yeah, that's probably my favorite one, is whenever you see a news story and it's a vehicle that's on fire. Oh, it was an EV. Of course it was an EV. Yeah, crazy.
I mean, yes. I mean, no doubt. Of course they were all EVs, everybody, but that's it. Well, Sarah, it's been... They haven't, just for the record. There's a stat, something like 24 times less likely. I need you and McTurk to commentate on this, but it's something like 24 times less likely to catch fire spontaneously than a ICE or, you know, diesel or petrol vehicle. Anyway, exactly. Sarah, enough of this. I've tested you and tried you, and you've proven to be EV royalty, expertise, personified at Europcar, and what a wonderful chat. Thank you. It's been really, really nice to get to know you a little bit.
It has. I've thoroughly enjoyed it.
Good. And don't leave the world of Europcar just yet to go back to restaurant touring or traveling around the world. Please stay with us for a little while longer. I'm sure you will. I'm sure that's the plan.
But yeah, scarred enough. I'm here for the long haul. It's all good.
Excellent. Well, that's great news. Well, everybody, listen, do check out the EV guide and the knowledge hub on the Europcar website. Also connect with Sarah on LinkedIn. As you can see, she's a lovely person and very, very knowledgeable. And you'll be able to ask lots of wonderful questions and get some help. But in the meantime, do head over to the EV Cafe and find out all the other podcasts, because if you've enjoyed this one, there'll be many others that will tick your box and help you on your own EV journey. But thanks for joining us. And Sarah, bye from you.
Absolutely. Goodbye. Thank you very much.
And bye from me, everybody. Have a great day.